Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point today are two wonderful people who have traveled all over the world that are going to share amazing stories with us, Mason McKendrick and Rochelle D'Estasio. Rochelle, Mason, how are you both? Great to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, of course.
Doing great. Thanks for having us. It's good to be back here in the motherland, Cleveland, Ohio. Very excited.
We're lucky to have you. Mason and I have been trying to make this happen for a long time, and there's just something different about being online as opposed to being in person, feeling the energy in the room, and being able to go back and forth here. So really glad you made it from New York and that you're here celebrating Christmas. It's a pleasure.
Yes, thanks for having us, man.
So why don't you two kind of just walk us through like who you are? Give us a little bit of what you do, where you're from, the background. Let's get to it.
Yeah. So I was born here in Cleveland, in Mentor, Ohio, and moved to New York about just under 4 years ago. But went to John Carroll, played football there, had a pretty good career, and that opened up the doors for me to be able to sign an undrafted free agent contract with the Baltimore Ravens. And then during that time, I signed a modeling contract as well. So that took me to New York and been living there, doing many different things like modeling, trying to get into the acting world, personal training on the side, even bartended a little bit, and just getting adapted to the big city over the few years. So it's been pretty exciting.
That's wild. And I mean, those 3 years were full of a lot of crazy things that the world's not seen before.
So yeah, roller coaster.
You got thrown into the wolves.
Definitely.
Yeah. Great. Rochelle, how about you?
So I was born in Palo Alto, California, raised in Nashville. Then I moved to New York when I was 14, and I signed a professional ballet contract with American Ballet Theater, and I guess coming for about 5 years. And then I, during our last season during the Met, we were doing Sleeping Beauty, and I got seriously injured, and then I got scouted for modeling, and I decided to go to the modeling route, and I was traveling all over. I lived in London and all over Europe, and then moved back to New York. So that's like kind of been my journey, going from ballet into modeling and now acting. So
it's incredible how both of your stories have kind of have that similarity. We were talking a little bit beforehand, like it points that are seemingly down, you managed to find great opportunities, and similar again stories at that down point, you guys emerged into what looks like to be future endeavors. So it's quite fascinating.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting time. We met right before the pandemic, a week before the world shut down, through mutual friends, and we hung out 3 times and decided to quarantine together and moved in. I think it was 10 days after we first met, and then took on the whole pandemic together and haven't moved away from each other since.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, on such a short notice to be able to do that.
Yeah.
All right, so walk us through it, Mason. So you're at Carroll, and you're like, all right, you have bigger dreams. Like, you know you're going for the NFL.
Yeah.
Get that contract with the Ravens to potentially be part of the team. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so that was an incredible time. I tell her all the time and brag about my time at John Carroll because it is truly such a special place. And on my first day of my recruiting visit, you know, you can feel the energy, you can feel the magic in the air and everything like that. And sure enough, there was just opportunity after opportunity through Carroll. And that thankfully led me to the opportunity to go through the NFL draft process and all that good stuff. And so it opened up. I was able to sign the undrafted free agent contract with Baltimore. And that was a whole roller coaster of that time period where I signed the modeling contract during that same time. I'm trying to make it NFL weight, do all the things I needed to do to cross those T's and dot those I's to be in the best position to start that career. In the back of my head, though, I always wanted to model. Coming in my freshman year of John Carroll, I said, by the time I'm a senior, I want to be training for the NFL and sign a modeling contract one way or another. And they both unfolded how they unfolded. I got messaged that December before that draft in 2018. My manager reached out to me through Instagram on a limb and said, hey, you ever think about modeling? And 2 days later, during finals week, I got flown out to New York and booked a magazine editorial, and everything ended up being pretty legit with the modeling and stuff, because I wasn't sure in the beginning because it was kind of a sketchy message where there wasn't too much context to it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I went out there, I come from a family of 6 kids, so I told one of my sisters that I was going just in case something were to happen, somebody knew. And my parents weren't aware of it or anything. anything, but I came back and I told them, I said, let me tell you this opportunity that happened that can be something really special, yeah. You know? And so during that time, I signed the contract. I went out for Fashion Week that February during that time too, and more things unfolded, more possibilities came about. And I ended up going through the draft process as well. My agency that I signed with in the beginning, I'm still with them, and they stuck it with me through that whole process. Told me, run your route, do what you need to do, and we'll be here when you're ready to come back and model. So that was very special to have that support from these people that I just met, you know?
It's some commitment right there.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, and especially when I got up to 230 pounds, because there's not a lot of modeling gigs at that weight. They were a little scared. Yeah. And they're like, oh, is he going to be able to come back and do it? But everything worked out. And the opportunity at the Ravens ran its course. I was signed on, went to rookie camp. After rookie camp, there was a little miscommunication. I was told I was coming in to play safety, so I was 210. They put me at inside linebacker, and I needed to be 230 for that. So I was definitely undersized, but I held my own. But they released me after that camp and told me it'd be 230 in July when they called me back. So I went home, I gained 20 pounds in 12 days, and I was 233 when they called me.
Okay.
Yeah, back in July. But they said there was a situation where it was going to be when somebody gets injured or gets cut, then they were going to call me back to bring me in. But at that point, I was hungry for the next opportunity. Instead of essentially waiting for somebody to fail to get that opportunity, I wanted to see what else is out there. What other impact can I put on this world, you know, and different adventures that I can go after.
And it's admirable, really, too.
Yeah, it was definitely a scary jump for sure.
So what? How did you know, like, the difference between every kid saying, I want to be in the NFL, I want to be in the NBA, I want to be a pro sports player, and, like, you saying, I can do this? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you know that there was a difference there between you and then the next guy in line who was like, eh?
That's a great question. I would give a lot of credit to my parents and their continuous belief in me, because there's twice in my life that I almost quit football, once in 10th grade and once in at the end of high school, because I wasn't even going to play in college. You know, I was going to go to Ohio University and be a frat star and party a little bit, you know. That was
dream, man.
Yeah, that was what I was debating on, because my senior year I fractured my hip actually in high school, so all the D1 opportunities and stuff like that quickly evaded. And so I was like, well, what's the point of going? Like, that was my dream, to go to the NFL. If I'm not going D1, then there's no chance, you know. And so my parents pushed me to go visit a few schools, and we didn't go to many, you know. We only did maybe 5 visits.
Okay.
And thankfully John Carroll was one of those. Yeah. And as soon as I stepped foot on this campus, told my dad afterwards, like, one way or another, I'm coming here, you
yeah,
know, like, there's an opportunity here. The coaches at the time and it were unbelievably talented. I mean, you can see where they're all at today in the NFL.
Nice.
And spread out throughout the NFL league, and some are still here and handling their adventures and stuff like that. But there's a time that, you know, you look at the competition around you and you see, okay, what can stand out? And as more opportunities come, you set these goals for yourself, and as you're obtaining these goals and more things are clicking, it's like, okay, well, things are starting to fall into place. And that buzz really came into fruition after my sophomore year, going into my junior year, where the opportunity, I started getting some notability of, okay, maybe this guy can make the jump from D3 to the NFL. So I'm very thankful for the continuous push from my parents, and the coaches that we had here during my time really opened up that athleticism to knowledge combination that you need to take it to the next level, and put me in the right position to be able to make those plays that put me on the map.
Right. Wow. It's incredible. And I would imagine, like, there's a certain sense of diligence that is required to play at such a high level, to compete at such a high level, and it seems to me that if you're going to do anything at a high level, you're probably going to need that. So to have learned that from football, to be able to correlate that over to your modeling acting career seems like an important jump, really.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a huge part, because it's, you know, that self-confidence and carrying that with you, and that mentality of, like, I have to perform at a high level and keep it up. And it really allows you to understand the wins and the losses, and learning in both of them. And one of my coaches from that time, Brandon Staley, he always said, don't ride the wave of emotion. You know, when you're on your highs, don't get too high on it. And when you're on your lows, don't stay down too low. Always be consistent in the middle of it. And that allows you to detach yourself from the ups and downs and remain consistent in your work and be diligent in your training and stuff like that. So with the modeling world, when you get all these no's, it's not you, you're able to stay in that frame of mind. Like, look, I know I can compete. I know, yeah, I can do this. It's just getting that opportunity to be put in the right place at the right time.
That's amazing. And for anyone that's listening that doesn't know, that is a playoff coach. Mm-hmm. This is a coach that's not walking into the playoffs as of last night.
Yep.
It clinched. In the NFL. Yeah,
yeah. It's
incredible.
He's the head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers now.
Mm-hmm. So when you decided, okay, like, I'm not going to take the opportunity to go back to the Ravens in July, and you decided, I'm going to focus strictly on the modeling career, how did your efforts shift? I mean, naturally, you're done with the football, you scrap it, you wipe that clean.
Yeah.
But then how do you say you call back at your people from before and say, like, you know what, let's give it a go. What does that look like? How do you go about that?
Yeah, so like I was mentioning, you know, I was 230 and they're a little nervous if I was going to – what I was going to be able to do, because they had some big plans for me that it wasn't just going to be a fitness model, because there's all these different categories in the modeling industry and stuff like that. So you have, like, your fitness, your high fashion, your runway, all this stuff. And at first they were talking, like, look, we have this big plan for you that you can do a lot of stuff in this industry. And then once I got that size, it was like, okay, maybe now he'll just be a fitness model or whatever. So I called them and told them that, and thankfully enough I got assigned. It was 2 days after I made that decision that I got called out for an Under Armour campaign. So I immediately got a job, so that was refreshing, like, taking this big risk. How long of a process is it going to be until I get that opportunity? And it ended up being 2 days, and I was and so I was like, okay, that's reassuring. But I was 230 at that time, you know, I was wearing hoodies, fleeces, all their workout stuff for the winter, which was pretty insane because we were shooting it in 96 degree weather in July. Yeah, in New York. So that was interesting. But I put myself in a frame of mind, because I really break down my life into 4-year processes. So you look through high school, 4 years, you look through college, 4 years, you know, and you have the first year. Even coming to John Carroll, my dad laid out a system of goals to obtain. You know, first year you learn the system. Next year you want to make special teams, travel roster, get some playing time where you can. Third year you want to be a role player. Senior year you want to be that starter, you know. And I told my dad I had a little different plan for that time schedule and fast forwarded a little bit. But I always look at my life in that situation. I told him, first year I want to learn the system, but I want to be playing. You know, so when I go into modeling, the first year I want to learn how the industry works, learn how everything, X's and O's work and all that, but I want to be shooting, I want to be working, I want to be doing it as I learn. And so then the second year you're a little more comfortable and you kind of got the rhythm of it a little bit, and then the third year you're really
you're out there,
you're out there, you're doing things that you're working towards, and goals are being accomplished and stuff like that. And then that fourth year you're able to enjoy the process as it's coming into fruition. So it's really like, okay, I just got signed by the NFL, that 4-year process just worked the way I wanted it to work. Now how do I do that by being a freshman again in this industry? And it just really allows you to take a step back and be a sponge with learning everything that goes into it.
What a great analogy. The sponge analogy is awesome. Any knowledge that you can take in and then be able to, like, spur back out is powerful. It's great. And Rochelle, walk us through, how do you become such an excellent ballerina? What, like, this is a world, I gotta be honest with you, I have no idea about, right? Like,
I didn't either until we met.
So, I mean, you're one of the best ballerinas in the world at that time. I mean, you probably still are, but at that time.
So, basically, I knew, like, I always wanted to dance. I did play almost, like, every sport. Like, my mom, like, really gave me the opportunity to be, like, you can do whatever you want. We can sign you up for gymnastics, soccer, basketball, volleyball. I was captain of my volleyball team when I was in high school. Like, I literally tried every sport, and I always went back to ballet. Like, that's where my love always was. Yeah. Like, I didn't feel the same passion and drive like I did with ballet. So my mom had put me in classes, like, when I first started, when I was 3 years old.
Okay.
And, like, you know, creative dance, whatever. And then I, you know, wanted to pursue it more of a career, and I told my mom when I was young, I think I was like 10 or 12, I was like, I'm going to dance with American Ballet Theater. And that's like, It's like if you go to college, like, oh, I'm gonna go to Harvard, like, okay, I'm gonna go to Yale, I'm gonna book the biggest job, like, whatever, like, the top of the list. And that is like the hardest company to get into. It's like number one in the world, next to like Royal Ballet Academy and stuff like in London. And so then my mom's like, okay, well, we're gonna have to move to New York City and, you know, train and if you want to pursue that next career. And so we ended up moving when I was 14 to New York. And then I was at the summer intensive for School of American Ballet, which is New York City Ballet School, which is a balancing technique school, which is also another really big company. And then I just kind of went up the ladder. Then I auditioned for the American Ballet Theater's like school, like the JKO school. And I got into the summer intensive on a full ride. And then I ended up getting into the studio company, which is the second company, Tash Lehman Company. And that's how you kind of go through the company at age like 16. Oh, so I was like one of the youngest that got into the company. And that was like my first job, because we get paid like a stipend, like $500, like nothing crazy. Yeah. But that was like, I had never worked like a regular job before.
It's a different feeling when you get paid for doing stuff
like,
you love.
Like ever. Yeah. Like I never like worked like a bartending, like waitressing, none of that. I was 16. Like I just like, we moved, like I was 14, you know, I was still in school. Like, I graduated when I was like right when I turned 16. So like I finished school like really early, because I did everything online. So I was at a private school, and then I transferred to academics all online, because when you're moving, it's just easier that way. And I just didn't have time for like my schedule. It just didn't work out that way to go into school. And then people always like, oh, well, you miss prom. Like, you never had your prom. Like, well, I get prom every day because I'm dancing with men all the time. Like, always joking. Like, I'm always dancing. Like, I go to prom all the time or whatever.
That's
great. So I definitely, like, missed. I always, like, reminisce and, like, think about, like, oh, I wonder what that would have been like to go to, like, regular school, go to prom, go to college.
Just
stuff
a sweaty
like that.
Gym.
Yeah, just a sweaty gym, you know, get something out of the punch. Like, hopefully it's spiked, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So I think it was just like insane, like just the process of like getting into a big company at such a young age. And then I got into the main company when I was 17. And then I got offered a contract with Dresden, which is one of the biggest companies in Germany, the Dresden Ballet. I got offered a soloist position, which is the second highest position in the company that you can get. And that was the time when I, like right 3 months before I got injured, when I was still with ABT, and because that's when they told me that I was gonna be too tall for the company. And because I was like literally the tallest, I was like 5'9 at the time, and everyone there that they had brought into the company was like 5'6, 5'7. And so they told me in the beginning of med season, and we have 3 months there. And so it's like, knowing I wasn't gonna get a contract going back, I'm like, literally was like the worst, like literally working so hard, no, I'm not gonna come back, dance for this company. And so, and then literally like like the last 2 weeks, same thing with Mason, that asked him to come back, like the director of the company called me in for a meeting, like, hey, actually, like, you've been working so hard, we think that you'd be such a perfect fit to stay at ABT, like, we really want you to stay here. I was like, thank you. I was like, thanks, but no thanks. I just like, at that point, it didn't feel the right fit for me to be there.
Yeah.
At that point, even though I had already accomplished, I was at ABT, like I was able to work with Baryshnikov, like the biggest names in the ballet industry. You know, I fulfilled my dream. I danced in front of hundreds of thousands of people.
That's amazing.
I traveled the world, went to Royal, you know, I did all of that. And I was just like very grateful. And then I ended up getting injured the last week of my season during Sleeping Beauty. And so during the same time, I got scouted by IMG and Wilhelmina Models. And I knew that was when I was younger, when I was 14, when I first moved, I knew that was my other dream I wanted to pursue other than dance and acting as well. But I knew I had to pursue ballet first, because that's more of a timeline, because you have to train like when you're super young. There's more of a scheduled time frame to get your goal of what you want to achieve. So yeah, that's pretty much how I'm here now, and modeling and acting. And
there's something like, you kind of feel slighted almost. Like, it's an awesome opportunity when they're like, oh, we're going to call you back, and they do call you back. You've been working hard. You're a great fit.
Yeah.
But you kind of feel like it's almost like backhanded. Doesn't it, like, feel...
Yeah, and I think luckily, you know, I think it was a blessing to kind of be able to be exposed to that, where it could be a slighted feeling too, but it also shows you that there's a lot more that goes into it that's out of your control. So, like, all these athletes that go through the process that have this opportunity of, you know, reaching the highest level of their respected sport, there's a lot that goes into it that's out of your control. There was two scouts that told me I was going to play safety. I show up, I'm linebacker. Well, that's out of my control, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you have to risk what to believe in and what to think that is kind of like smoke and mirrors. And during that time, learning that, it shows you, well, that happens in almost every industry that you come across to in everybody's life. You know, no matter what job it is, there's always politics involved. You know, there's always somebody at the top. There's always somebody telling somebody, this is what we think is best, you know? So it kind of helps you compartmentalize the rejection or that negative connotation of, you know, we think so, but maybe not today.
Yeah.
So it helps you take that back in. Look, it's not me making all these mistakes. It's not my lack of effort, my lack of drive. You know, some things are out of your control. And, you know, we believe that there's a plan for everybody. And sometimes you're not ready for that plan to come into fruition. And maybe you need to learn something or two before you're ready to get that yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so it kind of helps you with the mental part of it for sure.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you both have excellent experiences that you now can, I mean, you are sharing right now. And have as like your bolstering facts before you dive into the other part that you both said you had wanted as 14-year-old young kids coming into Carroll. Like, you have multiple dreams, and so to be able to do one and then to say, all right, you know what, it's time, like, time to hang up the cleats, time to hang up the shoes.
The point shoes.
There we go. Okay.
Learn something every day.
Yeah. See? Yeah, it's perfect. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
So then you're both at a point, right? So you guys meet each other in New York. You're doing this. The world shuts down. Tell us, like, I'm curious. Tell me about life when it's dead. Because, like, all the stuff you see on TV or the pictures on, like, Twitter or whatever, it was like, it looked like a ghost town.
Yeah.
Like, Times Square, like, no one there. Like, it, as if there's ever not a person.
It was. It was. Go ahead.
Well, no, I lived in this like really like luxury doorman building at the time, and I was on the 40th floor. So from my view, you could see all the way down First Avenue, and it was like completely empty, like just bare. All you would see would be like cop cars, like driving around, like six of them in a line, just like literally seeing if it's almost like The Purge. Like if anyone's on the streets, like you're going to prison or something. You know, like it was like they were literally just like searching to see if anyone's on the streets. It was scary, and then he would like go skateboarding, like Tom.
Yeah,
you
remember the old Call of Duty intro? 400,000 people used to live here. That's a ghost town. That's what it was. Like it was so eerie overnight. Like I give New York so much credit because of how many people live there.
How much we
overnight.
Adapted too. I think we did really well during the pandemic.
Overnight,
like, how big? You know?
Yeah. There's so many people all the time.
Right, because it was overnight. Like everybody disappeared, and I was calling people back home bragging about, you know, skating on one-way roads the wrong way, and they're like, oh, you're such, you know, you're so badass, you know? And I was like, listen, like,
you
don't get it.
Do
you
that
can't
there.
Even skateboard
like,
on some sidewalks, you know, in some areas. And it would take me what usually would take maybe 30 minutes to skate from one end to the other. In New York, it was taking me 10 minutes, 5 minutes. There was nobody.
Yeah.
And it was truly interesting because back home, you know, my parents would see New York on the news, and they were telling me that they were saying there's bodies piled up on the sidewalks, like Central Park was a morgue. And I told them, I was like, look, I said, it's not that. Yeah, they're like, we'll come get you. And I was like, listen, we ended up spending the first 2 months in that apartment. So it was, we like to say the whole world shut down for us to fall in love, you know?
Oh,
and but I told them.
There's the dream guy. Not the
right, 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 right.
But I told them, I was like, the only time you really saw the actuality of the pandemic was when you went to the grocery store. You know, people wouldn't even go down the same aisle as you, and you would be lined up outside the store to go in. And
if you cough, forget about it. Everyone just giving you like a death look. Like, if you sneeze, oh my gosh.
But it's a very eerie feeling. But I give credit to everybody that lives in New York because it truly did decimate the whole population. You know, like on the streets and foot traffic, all that disappeared. So it was very interesting, but we were there for the first 2 months and then moved down with my younger brother in Virginia, and then we stayed with him.
That was a culture shock for me.
Because it's very slow living.
The Nashville didn't kick in?
No, because like Nashville is still more of a city compared to Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's just Lynchburg. It's a very slow
pace.
Yeah,
it's very.
Life. Yeah.
But
it was good.
Did you guys get to model at all during this time? That was like. It's a long time.
The whole industry pretty much shut down for like 8 months.
Yeah.
And then there was...
They have unemployment kick in.
Yeah. Because there wasn't anything to do. And that was the time where like influencers and stuff like that really started ramping up, opportunities with that really came into fruition. And TikTok wasn't just this renegade dance party, you know. It was like, wait, we can monetize a lot of this stuff.
Because you're so big on TikTok, right?
She's pretty big on TikTok. I have to do a better job at TikTok.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, I'm much more adamant about my posting on it.
I would consider, like, I'm big, because, like, some people say they're big, they have, like, millions, like, I have, like, 157,000.
Yeah.
I feel like saying that, like, to some people, that's really big, but I feel like when you say the word big in general, like, it's usually people who have, like, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million.
Yeah.
But.
No, but 157,000, you're making money.
Yeah.
It's still good, yeah. I haven't monetized it enough because I wasn't as proactive, but now, like, I've been posting, like, every day. Now I'm taking it more seriously, because at first I was just, like, I feel like it's just like a joke.
Yeah, it was time,
it was, yeah, it was just like, it was, or you're constantly trying to like compete to like who can dance or give the most full out, like whatever, or do something crazy, something to get all these views, you know?
Right.
But I think like when it comes to social media, it's like if you learn, go back to the basics of doing it because you love to do it and you're yourself, you're going to naturally gain the following and people who want to support you because they like you, not necessarily what you do all the time. Like it doesn't always have to be calculated.
Like, right, yeah.
So,
that's a great point. All right, so you're in Virginia, you're working on social media because you don't have modeling to do because the world shut down and you're cashing the unemployment.
Yeah.
And then you end up going back to New York. Everything opens up, you go back to New York. Mm-hmm. What's that life like?
We went to Cleveland
for a week. Stop by here, yeah.
July, we went back to New York.
Because we were doing the TikTok and then I was also doing commercial masonry with my younger brother because that's what he was doing at the time. So went back to the blue collar days, which was nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good reset. Yeah, picking bricks up and putting them down, you know, grass, doing all that good stuff. But when we went back to New York, that it was one probably even crazier shock than when things shut down, because then it was like, okay, what's everybody's comfortability level? What is the new normal? All the restaurants were outdoor dining. I was bartending at the time, and then she got a bartending job with me shortly after that. And then you go into the winter, and people are eating outside in like 15 degree weather.
These little like plastic bubbles.
Yeah,
those igloo things, right?
Yeah. So, that was cool though, because it kind of slowed down New York and it gave it like a European feel, especially during the summer.
It was really cool.
Yeah, it was nice because, you know, there wasn't as much traffic. It was kind of wild. It was hard to find taxis at that time. This year it's been a little better, but before you would have to wait like 5 minutes or something before you even see a taxi drive by.
Forget about taking the subway. People thought taking the subway was like a death sentence just because it was like ground
because
and everyone's close to each other. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was, again, the resiliency of New York is so impressive because of how many times we've just adapted. I mean, throughout the world, yes, but how many times, because in New York, it's everything's accelerated, you know? Watching everybody get back into the swing of things and being able to work that bartending job during that time was such a special experience because, you know, the rules and regulations were changing from week to week. So it's like, okay, we can do this. Okay, we can't do that. All right, we need a plastic shield right here. Okay, we need one more foot.
Pull out the dividers.
Yeah, are they going to come shut us down?
Those were tough. Yeah.
Yeah, and we were working at this brunch spot that, you know, we were probably serving 50 to 60 people each, like in our respected sections at a time, you know? And
brutal.
Yeah, it was just chaos. And then jobs slowly coming back and the industry slowly coming back. Because normally you would have anywhere from 10, 15, 20 people on big jobs on set to, okay, well now there's a couple people zooming in, seeing that everything's going well. And then you only had the photographer, maybe a stylist, and one to two other people. So it was a lot more intimate setting going back. Coming out of the pandemic with that.
It's definitely very movie-esque.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Very movie-like.
Definitely.
Do you guys like the New York feel? Do you feel, like, exhausted by it?
It can be exhausting.
Or is it, like, kind of enlivening?
It is. I think it's a balance, and definitely being able to compartmentalize what you immerse yourself in. One of the biggest differences from, like, coming from Cleveland compared to New York is you kind of have to schedule time to hang out with friends and stuff like that. Compared to being here in the college field, everybody sees each other every day. You know, it's just naturally like, okay, I went to class, now I'm gonna go hang out, whatever.
Yeah.
And in New York, it's that you might see a friend once or twice a month, you know, because everybody is on their schedule doing their job, everything like that. So you have to really schedule time to be able to see people that you want to see. So it's,
but it still can be easy too, because you do get around New York fairly easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's just like, because I lived in New York for 12 years now, and so it's,
yeah,
like for me, if I'm anywhere for a long period of time, like I'm like, I need to rush New York, I just have to get back,
yeah,
here. It's like the energy is just like, when you arrive and you see this, like, it's literally how it is in movies. You instantly see the skyline of New York, and you see like the Empire State Building and all the, like, the famous, you know, outline of all the buildings. It just feels so magnetic and like exciting and eccentric, which is like, with how,
yeah,
like the energy is immediately when you just like arrive, it just feels different.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it just like kind of like fires you up just to like,
yeah,
get after it. It just,
yeah,
New York has that energy where you just feel like, It's a good thing and bad thing, because sometimes it makes you feel like you always have to be doing something, or,
yeah,
like you have this natural FOMO, like you're missing out,
yeah,
on whatever's going on, even though if there's really not anything going on, because it's like the city that never sleeps.
Yeah, right.
So, and that also counts like with us not having the best sleep schedule sometimes.
Yeah,
because,
right,
like, I definitely became more of a night owl because of New York too, just because it is, the nightlife is very,
yeah,
like prominent in New York,
yeah,
and it's, I love it for that. But
I always
say in comparison with like LA, like LA is great for what LA is, but I think like New York, it's a place of opportunity that if you work,
mm-hmm,
hard enough, New York will always open a door of opportunity for,
right,
you. It's a very grind, hustle city. Like, you never see people like flashing their cars, flashing this, flashing that. It's a very, like, it's grind mode. You know, the city, it's like, they don't, New York doesn't, it doesn't care how much money you have,
as
where
much
you
as
come
you put
from.
In, yeah,
it's like, it's, I, that's why I love New York, because I feel like,
yeah,
you have to really work hard. If you want to live in New York, you work, you earn it. You,
yeah,
earn to live there. And like, compared to LA, flashy. How many,
yeah,
followers do you have? What kind of car do you drive?
Right.
Where do you live? Like, it's very fake and surfacey. And yes, there's like definitely fakeness in New York too, but I think it's
everywhere,
very real.
Yeah,
yeah, it's,
sure,
very like grounded, and it always like motivates. Because,
yeah,
if you don't work hard there, you won't be able to survive.
Yeah,
you're like, they'll,
yeah,
kick you out.
And I think it's
expensive. Like, you gotta,
yeah,
have to want to make it. It costs,
yeah,
$50 to go outside and breathe.
Literally. With tax. Don't get taxed.
Yeah, right. I think
your tax is crazy.
It can definitely be exhausting, but like I said, you gotta compartmentalize it. And I think it's more exhausting when people come and visit, because they, like I mentioned before we got started, you know, you're trying to fit all of this stuff to do in 5 days, 3 days, whatever,
yeah,
it is that,
yeah,
you're there. So like, to truly be able to experience New York, it takes a couple times to visit it. But living there, you're able to, you know, take, okay, this is what I have to do for work, this is what I have to do for myself, this is what I want to do with other people, and have those resets where,
mm-hmm,
we're able to come back home to Cleveland and settle down and pay a normal
and like prioritize
amount for,
and remember,
yeah,
like, okay, this is how
for,
I need to,
yeah,
organize everything.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's good, because you kind of, like, I've caught myself since I've moved there, you know, you kind of forget what life is outside of New York when you're caught and consumed inside New York. And, you know, the accessibility of hopping in a car and driving somewhere instead of like, okay, well, now I have to take the train, I have to do this, I have to do that. So it is very good to refresh and reset by leaving every now and then. But once you're there for a while, you're able to get into a routine and stuff. So
yeah. That's great. I like the zeal to have both. You know, you want the zeal to refresh, reset,
right,
rejuvenate, and then you want the zeal to get back into it and,
yeah,
feel the energy and experience,
yeah,
that again too.
Definitely.
Guys, I have to ask you too, like, you both throughout your endeavors up to this point have kind of had like a manager,
mm-hmm,
or someone that's kind of helping you along the way,
yeah,
with that. What is that like? What's it like being managed by someone but also managing a manager?
Yeah. It's definitely interesting. And I was always joking around when it first started with my family, like, oh, let me call my people, you know, let me see what my people are saying. But I've, like, you hear horror stories about it and you hear good things about it. I've luckily, like I said, I had a team that I was really looking for a family feel. Like, I came from football, I came from all this camaraderie. I wanted that into it in an industry that it's not prevalent in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
But I've been so blessed. My manager that first scouted me has been with me since, always told me, hey, this is the plan, this is how we're going to get there and stuff like that. And a team with my agencies that are really working for me. So there's been ups and downs for sure, but I've had a team that I'm lucky enough that has always been looking for my best image, or the best for me in my career, and put me in positions where, hey, this is why we're doing this job, to get us to here and stuff like that. So there's some jobs that have come across the table that I've received from brands and stuff like that, but they taught me early on, like, usually if they know your sign, they're going to come to your agents if it's a respectable job and they're not trying to get away with something, you know, because when people reach out to you individually, now it's different with, like, influencing jobs and collaborations like that. That's more, I handle that myself, but with editorial shoots with magazines, campaigns, e-com shoots, like, all these different shoots are usually channeled through my agents, and they have said no for jobs. I'm like, look, I could use this money, man. Like, I can use this job for this paycheck. Like, what's the deal here? And they're like, look, that's not, if you take this job, it might prevent you from taking X, Y, and Z that follows. Nice. So there's been some instances where I might not understand in the immediate why we're not accepting this job or doing this job. But then, thankfully, I have a team that, well, it makes sense in the aftermath, you know. And
yeah, they've explained it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Just leaving in the dark, that would stink.
Yeah, because I know some peers in the industry that they don't have a good team. And, you know, I feel for them. And I tell them, like, I got lucky with my team because they really look out for me. They know who I am. They're personable with me. And they've always put me in the right position, you know. But there's also... like in every industry, there's people that aren't in it for the right reasons, or they're trying to manage their people in different directions and might go against your look or what you're trying to brand yourself. Like at first they were trying to paint a picture of this perfect, like, all American guy, like, does everything right, doesn't go outside the box in any way or form. And I'm a lot more creative and more, have a bigger personality than just this, you know? So in the first couple of years, I'd be showing up to some of these jobs with clients that maybe expected me to behave a certain way, and that's not what they got from me, you know? It wasn't this structured, strict, like, person that, okay, he's got more personality and stuff like that. So that was self-tape for me to learn how to deal with different clients and move that way. And they helped me, give me advice during that, and like I was mentioning earlier, with, you don't want to give them your full self, you don't want to give them too little that they don't care to get to know you better, but you want to give them just enough to intrigue them to bring you back for a job.
Yeah,
and how to, like, navigate those waters in the industry and stuff like that. So it is definitely interesting having a dynamic that you have people whose job is to work for you, but it's also you're kind of working with them, for yourself at the same time.
Yeah. It seems really dichotomous, but also like a nice blend. Like,
yeah.
In your case, like a nice blend. You do hear the horror stories, like a nice blend where you're working to really boost each other up.
Yeah, we're both trying to make it better.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So.
That's true. But
what do you think, Michelle?
I think that it's like also, like I was saying earlier, like going in mind that they work for you at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you have to sometimes really vouch for yourself and really be able to say, like, no, this is what I want to do. This is my goal. Like, yes, like, they're in the industry and they're good at their job and what they do, but sometimes you really have to advocate for yourself sometimes, because sometimes, like, you, no one knows you better than yourself, you know, what
so
you
true.
Really want. So sometimes, like, you know, what you think, like, right now, like, my agency wants me to cut my hair, like, really short, like, probably to here. And it's also, like, trusting, because, like, right now the industry, a lot of, like, big clients, because they're pushing me into very elegant high fashion, so, like, Fendi, Louis Vuitton, Dior, like, really those types of brands, those companies are booking girls with, like, really short hair. But, like, a lot of, like, you know, even shows that I see, those same shows, there's still girls with hair, like, that are my length.
Yeah.
So it's like, do I really want to cut my hair and listen to my agents because it's, like, what they think is would help me book jobs, or should I still, like, be myself and do what I'm happy and what makes me feel, like, the best and, like, feel beautiful? It's, like, taking that risk and that chance. And, like, I've also never cut my hair that short before. And so, like, a lot of people are like, you're going to look amazing because you have the type of face structure for it. And it's, like, trusting them and believing them, too, because they do want your best interests and they want you to book the jobs. And it's also just, like, taking a leap of faith and just doing it instead of just, like, oh, well, what if, you know, because you never know. Like, you could get it done and you could end up booking all of these things.
Right.
And then, like, with other things, you just have to also trust yourself and know that, you know, you are good enough to book these jobs whether or not you cut your hair or not. You know, it's having that confidence.
It's a balance of knowing too that they don't have all the answers. You know, they might give you advice and stuff like this and say, hey, I think this is going to work, and it could or it could not. And a lot of peers I've spoken to where it doesn't pan out the way that their agents recommended them to, they get all frustrated that, oh, I need a new agency, I need a new this. And it's like, no, it's because it's an ever adapting industry, you know, like something that's working on Monday might not be it on Tuesday, but you might see them on Tuesday, and if it was yesterday, it may have worked, you know. So it's like kind of we're getting on that same page where it's the confidence and belief in each other. Because I told them too, I had a conversation with my team. I was like, look, this is who I am, this is my personality, you know, and I know there's a balance that they're trying to have this image for me that they're pushing, and there's an image that I agree with that I want to push, but I also have this much to offer as well, you know. So it's definitely that self-belief, but understanding that we might both think this is going to work and it ends up not working, or you might think it's working, I don't, and then it ends up working, you know. Or
it may just work for someone else, but it doesn't mean it'll work for you. Like, you know, there's also a girl in my agency, they had her cut her hair to a pixie cut and dye blonde, and she's booking all these major shows and campaigns that she didn't before, just from a haircut, you know? So it's like, that could work for her, but it may not work for me. Maybe it could work for me. That could really open the door for me to book all of this new thing. So it's really up to me at the end of the day, but also trusting that, like, my agents do want me, because they see my potential, and I've expressed, like, what are my goals and, like, who I want to walk for. And people tell me, like, oh, you could easily walk for these big shows and stuff like that. And it's just like, well, you know, like, I'm still, like, waiting, you know. But it's also, a lot of it is have to do with just, like, trusting yourself. And I think, like, recently, because I've also got into the pageant world as well, and I think sometimes if you try too hard and if you want it too, like, much, it ends up, like, doing reverse opposite for you instead of just letting it happen. And because I always, like, why are the people who always get it, it seem like they don't want it at all, you know? You always see the people who, not like they don't try hard, or doesn't mean you, because you never know what they do behind the scenes. But it's not, if you really try to show too much or you really force it, I think it's almost like the universe pushes against it. It's like,
it's like a desperation.
Yeah, it's like a manifestation. Like, oh, you don't want a bad haircut. It's really saying you do want a bad haircut in a way. You know, it's like opposite, and it's kind of, it's like the cliche saying, if it's meant to be, it's going to happen for you. The way it's supposed to happen, the timing is truly everything. You may not understand it, like, heading forward, but then when you look backwards, you'll be like, okay, I didn't get why I didn't book it then, or I didn't do this or do that, or I maybe just not ready for it. So it's
why
just,
you came in as a supposed safety and wasn't a safety, why you got hurt, right?
Exactly.
It's crazy.
And that's why I was going to make that point too, that during that time it allowed me to learn, and I taught myself that I can't put all this faith in somebody that if they're telling me this is their plan for me, you know, like, I still got to believe in myself and what I see for myself and who I am day to day, what I have to offer, and bet on that, whether we have this play script for you that it's going to go this way if you do X, Y, Z, you know, and just allowing things to happen naturally, but that self-belief of in the back of your head keep pushing you and pushing you towards, this is going to work.
That's awesome, you guys. Yeah, I think you both, it seems like, have good dynamics with it.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of to that point, too, we talked about this a little bit when we were shooting the breeze while we were setting up. Like, it makes sense to me that models who are an actor or an actress, like, have real busy schedules, but, like, find each other. To me, like, I don't know how it would work if you were with someone, say, from Cleveland, who's got a little bit of a slower pace of life, where, like, you guys are slammed, you have book to book, and have people in your world that are working for you and also helping you with that schedule. Like, you both are going to understand that at a level that allows you to mesh, as opposed to someone, like, take myself, right? I hope I get it, but at the same time, like that's not my life, right? It's a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
So it always makes sense to me. Kind of dumbfounded that people are bewildered, like, well, it's like, well, why do they always all, like, why do people that are in the industry always end up together? And it's like, because they get it.
It
makes sense.
Yeah. Same with ballet world. A lot of people in the ballet industry, in the company, all day end up dating each other. Because, like,
I think it makes sense.
Yeah, no one really understands. Like, sometimes you marry or date someone who's in, like, in a different company, because it's like, you just get it. You just understand.
Yeah.
You go home, you talk about it. Like, it's very rare that I, like, would see people in the ballet, especially in the ballet world, be married to someone who is not part of the industry, or even if someone that was different, they had a similar type schedule where it was crazy and that they were able to still relate in some way. But I mean, it's so crazy because me and Mason have talked about it, like, before I met Mason, like, my ex was also in the industry, and I'm like, I'm not dating another male model. Like, no way, that's never gonna happen. Like, yeah.
I said the same thing that I was never gonna date.
I was on the whole like athlete run for like a while, like being in Europe and coming back. Like, I wasn't trying to date another model. Like, I was not trying to do that.
It's so funny.
And then it was like, again, when I was talking about, if you try so hard to want something, it almost like takes longer for it to happen. And I remember right when I was like living in London and I was about to come back, I was like, you know what? Because I am such a relationship person at the end of the day, like having fun, having flings, it's all fun and all and fun and dandy. But like, I always dreamt of like creating and building something with someone and creating memories with someone and having that and that communication, building that, you know, strong bond that no one can like take away. And I finally told myself, you know what, I'm just gonna like let go and just like when it happens, it's gonna happen. I genuinely said, like, I just don't care anymore. Like, I just don't care. Yeah. Like, I'm still gonna be my best self and not just like do whatever. And then that next week, I met Mason. Like, it was crazy. Like, obviously, it doesn't say, like, it's always going to happen that quickly with everything else in life.
Yeah.
But it was just, like, super interesting. Like, that was kind of the first time I really, truly just, like, let go. And everyone says, oh, it's going to happen. Actually, what's supposed to happen? And people tell me that I'm dating. I'm just like,
Like, there's definitely pros of being in the same industry dating. But I know a few people that have dated outside the industry as well. Some of them worked, some of them definitely did not work.
Like,
and I have one friend was in a relationship and their significant other I'm pretty sure was a teacher actually too, and it was like completely two different worlds. And like the scheduling, and she was ready, thinking of what we were talking about earlier, like went to school, got the job, now let's get married, you know. And he's in a situation where he doesn't have that in his near future and time frame, so it made it difficult of understanding, like, just speaking with him of like different jobs that he would have with females or males and stuff like that. So it definitely has pros of understanding what we both deal with and the scheduling, for sure, because it could be feast or famine, you know. Like, some months you could be working 3-4 times a week, then some months you could have one job a month, you know, or like two jobs a month. So it allows you know, that understanding of, hey, it's hot right now, it's not okay, we have a lot of downtime right now, what can we do to stay proactive, you know.
Nice.
Being able to motivate each other and keep pushing, like, hey, even if it's not hitting right now, we're still moving forward, we're still going in the right direction.
I think the best part is growing, like seeing the growth and seeing when like we book something and being able to celebrate that with each other and be supportive. I think it's just like, it's cool to see the journey, like being in the same industry too, understanding in that sense. Because like I said, I've dated people, like one of my exes who was a professional athlete was like, didn't understand. I'm like, well, how would you feel if I booked a campaign and I had to make out with someone? He's like, well, then don't take the job. Like, don't take the job. Like, literally would tell me that. He's like, then I don't think we can work out. I'm like, that's part of work. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's even, it's even worse with acting if you have certain scenes. And
yeah,
it was just like, ew, you know. Yeah. Again, it works sometimes.
We both have had jobs where we've had to do that. And it's like,
that's
what happens.
Yeah, but it's still in the back of your head. It's natural thinking about it and like not wanting it, essentially, you know. Like, but then it's the ability to compartmentalize it and be like, look, like, it is just
work.
Like,
be professional.
It means nothing. Like,
it's it, right?
Yeah. And also, if someone's really gonna leave because they just made out with someone, then they weren't meant for you. Then it really was never meant to be. If someone's gonna leave based off that they just had a romantic scene on set, it's like, okay, then I don't want the person anyways. If you're gonna,
The best thing about it is like, you're acting. It's in the name word. You're modeling.
Yeah.
Like, it's not authentic.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it is. I don't mean, you know what
I
mean?
No, but
like,
we understand.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the whole idea is that you're playing a part. You're building an image.
Exactly.
Right. Like, exactly.
That's just interesting.
I kind of have two questions for you with that. The first one's simple. Have you guys done anything together? Like, have you done any, have you had that opportunity yet?
We had some small shoots. It wasn't for a job. It was more the test shoot, which is kind of to develop the skill or whatever.
But everyone tells us, like, you guys should do a shoot.
Yeah.
And we did do a shoot with one of my friends. Like I said, it was like more of a workshop, and we did like Moschino campaign style type shoot. And Moschino actually posted the photo of us on their Instagram, which was really cool.
Which is Moschino's a high fashion brand from Italy that I've had the pleasure of working with for a few years now.
They're very big.
And,
it was really cool.
Like, it's also challenging too, because it would be different if we were assigned to the same agent. Like, then we might be pushed more so together as a collective.
But it's
then,
harder.
Yeah, we have two different teams working for us, and it's like, and sometimes in the industry, you know, relationships aren't the greatest thing for agents when they hear this, you know, but it's also respectful and understanding your own happiness and building yourself as your own image and stuff like that. But it doesn't happen all the time just because, oh, they're dating their models, let's book them together.
Yeah.
It's rare, but we're hoping one day.
Same with, like, acting.
That's what's going to happen.
Acting, like, you never see really, like, it was different. Like, Angelina Jolie and, like, Brad Pitt, they were, like, a different story. Like, you would see them in a couple movies, and they
crash
were,
and
like,
culture and,
yeah, yeah, but, like, a lot of directors, like, don't actually book married couples who are, like, successful actors together because they want the more authenticity of, like, people who don't know each other and building that instead of people who are already together and they're used to that, you know,
they're
that love,
yeah,
instead of just,
story,
like, imagining with someone new to create that magic on camera compared
right.
to, like, someone who's already together. But, like, the honeymoon love, it's something that's different. I don't know. But
right.
it's very rare, even in that scene, like, very big actors who are already together aren't usually booked together for, like, a scene.
I feel like that makes sense because, like, a couple's going to have their own identity as a unit. I just bet you they're going to fit the mold of
right.
what the acting world and
right.
scene
what
wants
the
or what
role
they know.
Is, yeah.
Right.
That's another reason, too. But sometimes, depending if the role, like you're saying, if the role is fit for that, then they would book, like,
yeah.
a couple then.
I feel like that makes sense, too.
Yeah.
And then, so then the second part, which is a little more complex, and we kind of threw this out there, too, a little bit. What does, like, practice look like? So you said, like, when it's feast or famine, so during the times that it's slower and you're working towards that progress, what does, like, the practice look like? Like,
yeah.
obviously the football has a lot of practice.
Yeah.
Ballet has a lot of practice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does it look like for a model? Because
it's a lot of that football and ballet, it's a lot of structured practice.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
You're expecting what you're going in that day to do, right?
Yeah.
And one of the biggest learning points coming from the football world to the modeling industry and everything like that was I was used to, you know, some coaches mother F you to get on the line until you do it right, like screaming, like intense until you get it right, do it again, you know. And then in the modeling world, whether you're doing it right, you know, people are like, oh, beautiful, amazing, like this is great, awesome, and then you can leave and they'll be like, what the hell is that guy doing, you
yeah.
know, or like what was that, and you don't know until later you hear back from your agents whether it was good or bad, and sometimes they don't even hear.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of, okay, self-tape, self-critique, like read off the person,
oh, nice.
The client, like,
yeah.
how are they reacting to this, you know? And, like, a trick I would use is, okay, if we're doing the poses this way, that way, in the beginning, in between the shoots, okay, maybe I'll dance a little bit, or I'll, like, move my body a certain way where they might catch it off to the side and be like, oh, yeah, do that for this now. And so I'm able to, like, push the boundary with some clients and warm up with them and being, like, or being able to show them, okay, I can move this way or I can move that way. One of the big things that helps me a lot, and I was telling her too, because she used to give me a hard time about it in our beginning of our relationship of how much I would look in the mirror, you know? And it, like, of course, seems narcissistic and self-absorbing, but to truly know what you're giving off in different angles or different looks and stuff like that, and able to work on your expressions in the camera or in the mirror can portray through the camera. So
yeah.
it's a lot of
yeah.
like, okay, let me just have an hour and dance in front of the mirror, or like look
right.
in the mirror in different angles and different poses and stuff like that. So it's a lot of self-tape and self-critique and
yeah.
trial and error. Okay, this might work. Didn't work for them, but it may have worked for a different client, you know?
Yeah, I think
that's
a lot
awesome.
Of people that don't think of that I like to do as far as like preparation is more like the mental side of it. Like not just the physical aspect
right.
of like your pose, like of course, there's the basics, like knowing your angles, knowing your body. It's really all about knowing your body and how, what pose, what you do, like Tom Ford. He never shows one side of his face because he knows this is whatever side is the best side. So you'll never, ever catch him in a picture showing his non-good side of his face. Like he said this in an interview.
Wow, okay.
He's like, you'll never see my other side of his face. It's like you just knowing yourself and knowing how you, like sometimes also if you're new, like going up, sometimes you have to show like certain sides that if the director wants you to do this pose and you know that's maybe not the best side of your face, you still have to learn how to do the best angle that you think your body is going to give off, even if it's not the best side of your face,
yeah.
you know? But for me especially, I think the mental aspect, because you have to have like very mentally, like you have to have thick skin and thick skull,
yeah.
like in ballet and same with like football or any athletic career. But with modeling, because you hear 1,000 no's really before you hear like the one yes that could change your career. And for me, like personally, like I'm still waiting for like the one yes that would change my career, because I'm still like fairly new in the industry because I didn't take modeling as seriously once I got signed, and then I was traveling a lot, and that was kind of like my focus is traveling and touring, which I'm like very grateful I did have that time in my life because I really saw so much of like the world and I got to experience a lot, and that also made me like different mentally in the way I view things and stuff. But I think just like, again, knowing yourself and knowing who you are and not let so many things get to you naturally with like how people may want something, because again, like you could go into a casting and you get the best, and I've had the best feedback, the best responses, don't hear anything.
Yeah.
Some of the ones I try the least for, kind of like, oh, like, oh, if I get it, if I get it, call back books, you know.
Yeah,
it, like I said, the same like from before when I said it, you try super hard because you know, like, oh, this is for like a CoverGirl campaign, you know, and it's like I wanted it so bad. Like, I have the closest bookings to the ones that I either crashed the casting, I never even got the casting, or I didn't care. Like, my favorite story was, because you're not really supposed to do it in modeling, but I was with one of my best friends in the industry, and she got a casting for a L'Oreal hair campaign. And I was just like with her because we were hanging out having coffee, and she was like, you should actually come with me and just crash it because your hair is amazing and they would love to book you. I feel like you get booked for this. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know because you're not really supposed to do that, whatever. And usually when it comes to campaign castings, there's like a list that they have everyone's name, who the agency, because it's specifically because campaigns are the biggest jobs you can book, especially in like hair, like commercial jobs or beauty jobs. It's like 20 to like 50, 60 racks that you book for like a 2-day job. So I was like, okay, I'll just go and see, whatever. So I was like, I walk in, like, oh, like, name, see. He's like, oh, my name's Rochelle, but my agent just sent me on this, like, this casting, so, like, I don't have my comp card or anything. Like, I might not be on the list. So, like, she's like, okay, come in. So, and this was, like, 3 years ago, so I wasn't with the same agency when I did this. But I sit down, and they're taking pictures. And, again, like, I'm just, like, nonchalant, because I'm like, I didn't even get this casting. I'm probably not going to get it. I go in, they're taking photos, and they think I'd be perfect fit for this style of hair. The next, I told my agency that same day, like, hey, like, I actually crashed this L'Oreal hair campaign cast, so if you hear something from them, that's why, you know? And they're like, okay. Next day, my agent, hey, you just got a call back. Can you go to their headquarters, da da da? And I'm like, really? And I'm like, and my friend who actually got the casting didn't get a call back.
Oh my God.
So then I go in, and they're like, the main guy who's directing is like, oh my gosh, feeling my hair, love your texture, it's amazing, like, I can see this, da 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 da. And then I tell them, my agent, whatever, and the next day they're like, oh, you got an official, like, the last callback casting. So now it was just between me and one other girl to get booked for this job. And I was like, what's going on? Like, oh my gosh, this is so crazy. And they, you know, they didn't choose me, but I was like, I was picked, like, the last person with just one other girl. It was between out of, like, 100, 200 girls that they saw, and I never even got the job.
Yeah, right.
But it was like that same mentality that I feel like if I just go in being myself, and if it happens, it happens, instead of like, oh, because I know it's going to be a campaign or it's a job, I need to be more like this or that and really showcase and show off whatever. And so I think that's something I like to look back with, like, mentality wise, that like if it's meant for you and it's supposed to happen, it's going to happen. Like, still put your best face forward and best foot forward, and not like overthink every little thing and just do it. And walk out, know you gave everything that you could, and just let it happen the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
So
the mental side
is like, I think, the most
huge
work process, especially when it comes to slow season, you know, because the season of modeling is very up and down.
And
so,
being able to maintain like a level head through the yeses and nos, because sometimes even when you get those yeses, it doesn't pan out the way either the client wants it or you expected it to be too. And because a lot of your looks come through your eyes, and you can see the emotion and passion in the eyes through the pictures that are taken, and being able to maintain that mental allows you to portray it through your eyes. And it can be challenging at times for sure, but always understanding the self-confidence and the self-worth of, okay, I'm here for a reason, I'm in the room, I'm trying to get at the table, okay, I'm at the table, I'm trying to eat,
believing
in yourself,
definitely.
That's amazing. Yeah, could you guys have like some shoots that stand out that are like some of your favorites? Like, that's an awesome story.
That was crazy.
I've had some pretty great shoots. I was mentioning, you know, the important shoots to me, not necessarily are my biggest shoots that I've done, but some of them that mean a lot that are full circle, you know, like working with Tom Brady's brand and it coming full circle because, okay, I had the football history and then I'm doing this and the people from the football world are going to recognize this job, or working for Express, being able to come to Columbus, being from Ohio, and this was the first job that put me in stores of actuality where people are able to see, like, okay, he is modeling, you know, like, because there's so much that goes, yeah, there's so much that goes into the modeling world that isn't seen to average person or somebody that's not in the industry that knows. And so those were special moments. And then being able to fly to Colombia for 3 days and doing a shoot in Colombia was awesome. Yeah. That I did last February, and it wasn't the biggest job or anything like that, but I got flown to Colombia to work, right. You know? One of my favorite jobs I did was this runway show I walked for Philip Lyon, and it was one of my first jobs into the industry too, and it was kind of like, this is what it can be. And Philip Lyon is known to have these elaborate parties for his fashion shows and stuff, and he had this huge warehouse rented out, and on the ground there's all this fake snow over the entire warehouse floor and these big metal built mountain looking scapes, and on the ceiling there was a UFO that stretched the entire length of the warehouse pretty much. The UFO came down and left the DJ stage through the base of it, and then the UFO would go back up and the DJ stage stayed. And there's a robot, probably a 6'5" robot that walked the runway with us, you know. Migos performed at this show. All these things happened, and it was one of the first. It was the second night actually I moved there, when I officially moved there. Wow. And it was the second night, and I'm walking, and I'm like, well, okay, here we go, you know. And that was a pretty special moment. Yeah. You know, being able to work on a few campaigns here and there has definitely been special.
Yeah. Have you guys been able to backlog to any places where you were together before you knew each other?
No, the only time was supposed to be this party that she was hosting. Yeah, a year before we ended up meeting. And that same mutual friend was inviting me to the party, and for whatever reason, I didn't go.
Yeah.
And we both said that we were thankful because we were both in the position, definitely, that we were like, no, like, we're not looking for a significant other or anything like that. Yeah. We definitely would have hit it off if we met that night. And then shortly after that party, she was moving to Europe, and it allowed that natural time for when we did meet. Again, we weren't looking for a significant other, but it just clicked like it did. And that was the only time that our paths would have crossed before.
I think it's crazy when people can, like, backlog to, like, oh, we were in the same place at this time, and like, didn't know each other, and then, like, fast forward.
I mean, we probably were, curious. I'm sure, like, maybe at an event or something, just didn't realize it. But
Who are some of, like, your biggest influences? Like, whether it's, like, whether you know them, like, your mom, you mentioned, both your parents, or your mom, or, you know, that, like, having, maybe it's someone immediate that you know, or who are some, like, on a bigger scale?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like everyone always, like, laughs at me when I say this person, but I'd have to say The Rock. Like,
okay.
Dwayne Johnson is, like, my biggest, like, inspiration, because... Okay. He's, like, my biggest also, like, person I would love to work with, like, on a movie or set, or even if he directs, like, I'd just love to meet him and work with him, because of just, like, his story. Like, he literally came from nothing, like, at all. Like, his famous story of $7 in his pocket, you know, like, I didn't come from a lot of money either, you know, it was just me and my mom. Like, my mom raised me, she was my mom and my dad, you know, played both parts. I don't have any siblings, and so you know, she works from the ground up too, and it's just like, just because, you know, sometimes, like, you're not maybe given the same opportunities, like, you know, you see people who come from the families who are already, like, well developed, you know, in the modeling industry and acting, and it's so much easier on their path because they have those easy opportunities to be given to them to, like, do something. It's like, oh, like, sometimes you feel like it's not fair because you feel like, oh, like, you feel like you could do this a little better or whatever. You get the kind of that, like, mentality, like, you get stuck in your head. And then I feel like just with The Rock and who he is, and he had the same similar story with going to football. His dream was to play in the NFL, and he got cut. Like, he wasn't, like, in the story, he wasn't good enough. He couldn't play, but that was, like, his biggest dream. And he said if he didn't get cut, he would not be where he is today and got into acting and all that he did. And he said, like, he had the same story, you know, everything happens for a reason, and you have to trust your time and not also look at your age as something that, like, holds you back because of the industry we live in, that, like, oh, if you're this age, if you're 25, 26, you should already be here, because it's so easy to compare your age to someone else who's already, like, 10 times ahead of you, that you feel like where you should be because you're the same age as them, and it makes you feel like it can hold you back. Because, like, there's no one that can hold you back than yourself. And it's like, well, you feel like you can't try as hard because, like, well, I should already be there. So, like, I'm embarrassed to, like, keep trying to do this because, like, I should already be there or something like that.
Yeah.
And just, like, again, him coming from literally nothing, how humble he is and modest. Like, he drives a pickup truck. Like, he gives back. Like, he's very real and open. And, yeah, he's, like,
a goofball
and stuff.
Yeah.
But his story and, like, who he is, like, he never, like, changed. And, like, he always said he would go back home to remember, like, where he came.
That he literally
came from zero, and that, you know, he's a multi-millionaire, that, like, it never changed him, like, the money, like, the amount of zeros that were attached to his name,
right.
You know, like, and that's, like, my biggest goal, like, in that, in life, is just being able to inspire millions, hundreds of thousands of people. And same with Kobe. Like, Kobe is, like, another big inspiration for me.
Right.
And how, like, when he passed away, like, you don't remember, like, how many cars he had, like, how much money he had, or, like, the clothes, this and that. You just remember the impact. Like, I remember when he died, like, I cried myself to sleep, like, four nights straight. I've never met the guy. I never even went to a game of his. Like, I would see him on TV and stuff.
Sure.
So, like, because of his impact and who he was as, like, a person, like, affected me so much. I was like, wow. Like, he literally, like, the world, like, was silent for, a long time. And it's, like, having that much impact, like, shows his character. And I think for me, like, hoping, like, I get, you know, that acclimated in life and that successful, that I still could have that same impact and not be changed. Because obviously, I know, I'm sure, like, he was tested too. Like, when you give all the fame, the energy, the photographers, like, you definitely have those moments where you kind of feel you're, like, a little like this. But, like, going back to, like, your basics and remember, like, who you are and not changing that. So I think in this industry too, because it's like a black hole, you can easily get sucked in.
Right.
And when you're around all these famous people, the drinking, the whatever, the cars, the clothes, like, it's very easy to, like, lose sight of why you're doing it and what's the main, like, purpose. And his famous quote, like, how he defines success is being able to inspire others to want to inspire the next generation.
That's so,
like,
cool.
That's what, like, success for him is defined, not because, like, he always said the job was never done, even though he was, like, MVP, this, that, won everything, you know, like, he's like, the job's still never done.
And it's like the story from Vanessa when she was speaking and at the funeral, and she's like, you know, like, he always played, like, because he never sat. Like, obviously, he had so many injuries, and, like, his recovery time was so fast because, like, he was always playing.
He's always the first in the gym, too.
Yeah, first in the gym, last guy to leave.
Yeah.
And he would always play, and his, like, rationale was, like, you know, there's someone that saved up to get their kid to go watch me play.
Yeah.
And, like, that's so sick.
Yeah.
I mean, just
that
humility
that
you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Those two are awesome.
Yeah.
Rock and Kobe.
Yeah.
But I just love, like, that passion because, of course, there's so many, like, famous people and stuff, but it's, like, those are the types of people that, like, really make a difference, because I really genuinely love helping people and, like, and being able to, like, even if it's, like, one person, like me, I'm trying to, like, build, because I have another TikTok account, too, and it's, like, it's obviously still off the building from the ground up again, because I'm trying to do different content, but it's, like, I tell myself that even if I help one person or one person sees it every single day and follows me, that, like, matters to me, because like I'm changing one person or helping them and whatever, and like
just
trickles.
So I think that's
domino effect. Definitely.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How about you, Mason?
Those are great examples. I definitely share influence from those two as well.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, definitely my immediate family and the circle of friends I keep around myself. You know, I've always kept my circle small, but everybody plays a role in my life that I keep close with me, you know. So I look for inspiration through, you know, my dad, my mom, my brothers, my sisters, and what they've gone through in life and how do they overcome these adversities and stuff like that. Or friends, like, how did they handle a situation like this? And I'm always able to revert back through times of difficulty or struggle and say, okay, how would so-and-so that's close to me, how would they think of this? And give me different perspective within my own perspective. Just thinking how they handle situations differently. On a larger scale, you know, people that I haven't met necessarily, I always looked at a vast majority of success, like, okay, what what did this person do to be successful here? What did that person do to find success in their journey? And like people that are able to do all sides of the process, like you look at LeBron James, of course, a big influence for me. He's able to play every position on the floor. He's able to come from absolutely nothing as well, but still provide and be one of arguably the greatest ever, you know?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Kanye's going through what he's going through right now, and he's a mad genius, and right now we're seeing the mad side of him. But just again, if you've ever seen his documentary, he was able to control all parts of the process. You know, he's able to do all parts of creating a song, make the beat, add this, add that, and have the lyrics and be able to be all parts of the process is what I valued and try to reciprocate in my own life. You know, like when I want to make content, okay, well, I want to be able to make the video. I want to be able to edit it. I want to do the sound.
Yeah.
I want to put it out. I want to be able to model. I don't only want to model fitness, high fashion. I want to be able to do it all. Whatever the job is, I want to be able to do it. So I, especially during the NFL process, I took styles of gameplay from many different players, from D linemen, from linebackers to DBs. Okay, how are they successful in their respective positions? How can I curate that into my own game? So I've always been, like we said earlier, a sponge, you know, a sponge of knowledge. All right, there's not just one way to success. There's not just one way to do this. How can I take from all these greatness, all this greatness from all these people and curate it into me? And how can I use all these different avenues and advice to curate it for my success? So, you know, some of those people in the acting industry look up to Ryan Reynolds, you know, look up to Mark Wahlberg, you know, some of the greats, obviously, and just see their stories, their journeys, what they went through, and just being able to learn from a handful of people and curate your own success story through is definitely where I get a lot of my influence from.
Yeah, that's awesome. To be able to take it from people and then just put it into practice and like take tidbits from each person and be able to culminate it into authentic you, I think is always so impactful and effective.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think it's so effective.
Yeah.
Because I feel like those types of successful people like always have that one thing in common. It's like looking at that and how they, like remembering where they come from, the humility, and just like being able to help others.
Yeah.
I think that's like what speaks to people more. You know, even if like there's people out there who obviously aren't nice people, it still does affect those people at the end of the day. Like even if they don't show off, like showcase that they're like grateful or that they act like it doesn't affect them, like it still does. Like even those types of people that don't like.
Yeah. And I always took in advice my dad always gave me was with football, was the more you know, the more you play. The more positions you know, the more you're gonna be on the field. You can be counted on and relied on to do any job that's on the field if you know it. And so I look at that and I take those pieces of, all right, if I know how to do this, I can do it. But what if I want to do this too? Because I think past generations, you know, I think we're truly a golden era and generation young enough to know what it was before internet and stuff like that, but old enough to understand before and young enough to get where it's going, you know. And before, you know, you would have to have a specialized skill to be successful in what you want to do. But now you're able to do many things, teach, coach, do a podcast. You're able to take all these different avenues and curate it. And there's not these defining careers you have to do where it's like, okay, well, that's what you do. You're in a box. Why would you do anything else? How could you do anything else? But no, you look at all these people that we've grown up admiring that are able to have different assets and within their life and different skills, and you're able to put that out into your life and be successful in all these different areas.
Dude, humans are so multifaceted. Like,
yeah.
There's so much that makes up a person. And like that's been my favorite thing about having guests on here who do stuff and like are out there and living.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a story, and there's a lot that culminates in a human.
Right, definitely.
Yeah.
And knowing like we're all
it's
the
beautiful.
Same, you know?
Yeah.
Like we all come from different like parts of life, but we all have, I think, more in common than I think people like
the differences,
realize.
Yeah,
totally.
You know?
Yeah.
Like recognizing like everyone is human.
Guys, so as we kind of come here to a close and to wrap up this episode, which has been amazing, by the way, thank you both.
Yes.
I'll come to both of you, whoever wants to start, take it, have advice to someone either in the field who's an aspiring actor, actress, model, ballerina, football player, whatever the case, wherever you want to take it, or just in general, do you have like a piece of advice?
Yeah, definitely. knowledge is power, man. So it's definitely, the more people are able to do this, and I think that would, before I get into that, I think that was one of the most difficult things about the pandemic and the separation in costs or developed in, between people, and that divide amongst everybody, you know, like everybody's scared to see each other, and it got people to stop sharing stories and communicating and stuff. So with knowledge being power, you know, something I was always told was, especially from my mom, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right. So your mind is your most powerful weapon. And if you have the self-belief and you truly believe that you're able to do something, you keep working at it, you keep working at it, eventually it will come into fruition, you know. And if it doesn't come into full fruition at what you're expecting, you're still, how much can you learn from all of this different milestones of trying to accomplish something? You're able to learn lessons throughout the process. I go back to that four-year mindset, you know. Okay, I might get to where I want to go by the third year. I might be short by the fourth year, come up short, but I'm still able to learn and grow by taking that risk, going after it. And whether it is happening right away or not, the hardest thing is the voice in the back of your head. Is this making sense?
Yeah.
Is this worth it? Is it going to pan out? Instead of focusing on if it, focus on what can we do, what are we doing to get after it. And I always tell my friends too, you know, you're the pilot to your own future. You know, you're able to drive that ship wherever you want. And if you decide to keep going, even if you fall on your face, because you're not gonna be able to get that moment twice. When I almost walked away from football in high school, my head coach Steve Trevisano told me, he's like, You're never going to be able to play high school football again on Friday night with your boys. You know, like, you're not going to be able to get this experience back. So whether you're able to come in and start for me, whether you're coming in role player, bench, you're never going to be able to experience this moment again. So instead of living life later, shit, I should have tried doing this, I should have chased after that. Well, do it, even if you fail, you know? Like, even if it ends up coming short, you're still learning and have that experience of trying. And there's lessons that you can teach people, give advice during failure just as much as during success.
Yeah. Those are great words, Mason. They really are.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, my biggest, I think, thing that I like to look at, I think even Kobe said this too, or probably, what's his name? Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
He said, you can't succeed in life if you don't fail. And so you have to look at failure as a positive, in a sense, even though it's a negative word, that failure is actually a good thing, because it takes you on a path of success. And, you know, it's not how many times you fall, it's about getting up every single time that you do, and to just keep believing in yourself, because, again, like, there's no one that can stop you from reaching your highest point than yourself. And just taking each moment that you fail and as a learning process, and that life is a journey, and it's not about the destination, it's like the way of life, and that every single moment you're given is to help you go into the next, and to not focus on the destination. It's just that you're here in this moment, you're here for a reason, and to enjoy it, and to just enjoy life, and not live in fear of, like, oh, I could be here, I could be there, and just, like, take every moment and just live it like it's your last.
Yeah.
It's cliche, but because then you take more risk, and the more risk you take, the more likely you're able to fail and then succeed, and then that way you can enjoy it and just live life happy, because, you know, like, again, with Kobe's passing as well, it's like life is so short, and it's just like, it's really just taking in with COVID. If, like, COVID didn't teach you anything, like, that should teach you that life is too short pandemic, like, get up off your ass and just, like, get to work and just, like, go after your dream, you know? Just, like, keep pushing. If you work a 9-to-5, keep pushing. If that's, like, what your job is, you know, just, like, keep going after it, and just, like, believe in yourself. Like, even when you don't feel like doing anything, just do something, even if it's the littlest bit, at least you did something.
And cliches are cliche, but they work.
They're for a reason, because they are.
I tell a lot of my friends that, you know, I talk to them during their times of struggle and my times of struggle, and I'm like, you have to sometimes trick yourself, you know, lie to your mind, you know, like your mind can play tricks on you.
And,
playing back,
yeah.
You know,
and to
like,
never go off emotion, because if you're always led by your emotions,
oh,
then it's gonna set you back more. You know, it's like if you feel lazy, doesn't mean you have to follow suit by your actions just because you feel lazy,
right,
you feel tired. Like sometimes you have to just do it, and then your mind will then follow.
Yes.
Don't let your mind always follow for your actions to leave behind.
And I always tell them, wake up and say it's another day in paradise. So like a lot of people, every time they see me, that's it.
They always say that, another day in paradise.
Another day in paradise, because why? It's always 75 and sunny up in the mental.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what it is, I know today's going to get me to tomorrow. I know whatever I'm doing today, I'm working towards a better tomorrow. So whether it's a good day or a bad day, you know, and the cliche, we don't take L's, we learn lessons, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
and stop saying you're going to do it tomorrow. Just do it today.
Yeah.
Right.
You guys are amazing. I mean,
I
appreciate it.
Yeah,
it's just, it's awesome to hear and experience you two like in such a refreshing way. And I appreciate both of you coming too.
Yeah,
of course.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful, wonderful episode here. So again, everyone, I'm your host, Joe Clark. I had an amazing opportunity today with both Mason and Rochelle. We appreciate you tuning in. If you haven't yet, it's time to hit the subscribe button.
Yes.
I don't know what you're waiting on. I will have all their info and kind of a little description on both YouTube and, of course, anywhere you're listening to this podcast, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'll have some sort of contact info for both of them. They're busy people. Give them, if you're reaching out, know that. But
no, we always love people reaching out.
Yeah.
Just spreading our knowledge, you know, and we reach out to people too. Like, we reach out and we try to get knowledge. So that's why I said, you know, the more you know, the more you play. So
we're more alike than we are different. We're just talking.
Exactly.
About it. So,
right.
Yeah. But again, Mason, Rochelle, thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's been another episode of Chats with Clark.